Okay, good evening. We are good to go. Okay. Okay, good. So, as we know, there are a couple of malachos on Shabbos. The malachos are generally translated as creative activities, not necessarily work. Work is a bad translation, but that gets into all the, it's not so hard, I'm not really working that hard, all those different things. So malachos are really creative activities. So malacha is always going to be, not always, with few exceptions, but in this realm, when we talk about malachos on Shabbos, we're generally talking about something that's been created anew. Meaning something has changed. It's not just you've done work, but something has changed. So when we're talking about bishul, so you are creating a change from a food that was not cooked, from being raw, to becoming something that is cooked. So when we talk about hot foods on Shabbos, there's really two divisions. We could really divide up the issue. So number one is what we're going to do tonight, the issues of liquids, the issues of what is really heating up something else. Right, so that's really the malacha of bishul. Right, that involves the malacha of cooking. We're cooking from one thing to another. So what we're not talking about tonight, we'll probably get to next week, are all the issues with heating up food during the day. Heating up food during the day, even though it's usually categorized under the category of bishul and the category of cooking, are really not a malacha. Does not really involve the malacha of bishul. Not, I should say, at all, but it doesn't really involve the malacha of bishul. What malacha does that imply? So usually, most of the stringencies that we have in terms of a blech, in terms of staying away, in terms of putting something on top of another so that it doesn't look like cooking might be a cooking thing. But using a blech is generally to guard us from stoking the flames, or turning up the fire, or turning down the fire. And that's obviously not a malacha of bishul. Rather, that's a malacha of Mavir, that's a malacha of lighting flames. So tonight we're going to be mostly dealing with the malacha of bishul itself. As we move on, the next, I put down for 3 weeks, it might take 4 weeks, of the other issues when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, we could very well easily find ourselves dealing with several other malachos as well, even though it all has to do with food heating up and not heating up. Okay, so what can cook? So when we talk about liquids, we'll talk about it with the following story. So the first source on the page is from a Mishnah in, I forget now if it's a Mishnah or Gemara, from Gemara in Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Yitzhak Bar Avdimi, Pam Achas Nichnasti Achar Rabbi Leves HaMercha. So one time, Rabbi Yitzhak Bar Avdimi says that one time I went after Rabbi into the Beis HaMerchas, into the bathhouse, Uvikashti Laniach Lo Pachshel Shemen Ba'ambati. And I wanted to put my pach shel shemen, my can of oil, or my little, you know, oil thing, into the hot water. But Amar Ali, and he told me, don't put it into the hot water directly. Tolbikli sheni v'tein. Rather, take a kli sheni, take a secondary vessel, and put it in it. I mean, don't put it directly into the hot water. The hot water, at that time, was being heated in one of two ways. It was either heated by a fire that was underneath the bath, right? They would just light a fire underneath, and that would heat up. Basically, you were going to the bath in a big pot. And the other possibility is that it was connected to a hot spring. Right? In both of those cases, though, right, it's direct, it's hot water. It's basically you're going something that's connected to the heat source, you're connected to the fire. Right? So, oh, welcome. So when it's directly connected to the heat source, so he said that that's a problem. Rather, take some water out from this heat source, right, and make up a separate vessel, and you could use that, you could put whatever you have into that, and that will, you could heat up your oil in that way. So the Gemara says, Shma minatlas. We learn from this story three important halachos. Number one, Shemen yeshbo mishum bishul. Number one is that oil is in the category of something that can be cooked. I mean, oil, even though oil doesn't cook when you heat up oil, whatever, oil could be cooked. If you heat up oil, that violates the prohibition of cooking.
But if you say it has to change in some way, when you boil water or even boil oil, what are you changing?
Right. So what exactly is changing? When you change water?
I presume this is on Shabbat.
Yes. Sorry, I left that out. Rashi points out this is Shabbos.
It doesn't say here.
Right. So Gemara and Shabbos. So, what are they doing in the bathhouse?
Yeah.
Another, this the prohibition against going to bathhouses is something that's it's a separate discussion. It's a different thing. We'll save that for another time. What exactly are you changing? You say you're changing it from cold water to hot water. That itself is a change. You're changing the status of water to being hot. That's enough of a change. Okay? So, Shema Mina Shemen Yeshbo Mishum Mishal. The Shema Mina Kli Sheni Eno Mevashel, which is going to be the main thing we use for this year. Right? The Gemara says that a Kli Sheni, the second cup that has gone in and now has come out, and now you have a cup of water sitting there, is a Kli Sheni, right? A secondary cup, Eno Mevashel, is not going to cook what you put in it. Okay? So that's. We'll say that for a second. Vishma mina, and we learn one more thing. Hipshiru zehu vivshulo. That to put the stuff in there, that already is considered it's bishul. That's considered it cooking. Okay, to drop it in, that already is considered cooking it. Okay, so the Gemara raises, the Tosfos on the side of there raises a very important question, which bothers everybody. So there's a famous joke that at Shabbos, at a catered affair, so the waiter is going around pouring from his tea curd kettle into everybody, and he accidentally tips over and it pours onto some guy's lap. So he says to the person, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, you must be burnt." To which the person says, no, I'm okay. It was a cliche-ny. I'm all right now. All right? So Tosus raises the question, Tema maishna cliche-ny mikli rishon. What are we talking about here? What is the difference, right? Cliche-ny or kli rishon, whether it's a secondary or a single verse. The yatsu ledes, I feel cliche-ny nami. If it was hot, right, if it's a yad soledes, if something what we define as yad soledes is a little bit is unclear. That's the Gemara's language of you'll take your hand away. So it's very unclear what that temperature is. Does it mean that if I'm surprised, I'll take my hand away? Does that mean that even knowing it, I'll be able to hold my hand in? There's a big question about what that is. Personally, my tradition is to be pretty strict in that. Meaning, well, anything that's hotter than not hot, anything hotter than lukewarm, we're going to be concerned that it's a yad soledes though. Yeah.
Surprising that a bath would be considered too hot.
Right. So this is a proof to say that yad soledes does not mean that I could manage to keep myself in the bath. Right. Yad soledes might mean that I'm expecting for it to be cold, and all of a sudden it's a little bit warm, right? So I would take my hands away. So tema ma'ishna kli sheni mikli rishon. Vi yad soledes afil kli sheni nami. Vi ein yad soledes afil kli rishon nami. That we're not just because it's the primary vessel or a secondary vessel, right? It should matter how hot it is. Why should it matter what vessel it is, right? I'm worried about what's going to heat other things up. So v'yesh lomar l'fisha kli rishon mitoch sha'amar al ha'or dofnosav chamin u'machzik chomo. That we say because the primary vessel, because it is sitting on the flame, or because it was sitting on the flame, right? Even if I turn the water off underneath the pot, it's still a kli rishon, right? So because that is the pot that I used to heat it up with, the walls are warm as well. And what else? V'lachein. And it actually retains heat longer. And therefore, it has it maintains its heat as long as it's yad soledespo aser. About klisheni, afal gab the yad soledespo, but a secondary vessel, even though it's yad soledespo, mutter, it's the permissible she'ein dofnosov chamin v'holeichu miskar, because the walls are not very hot, and it doesn't have as, I don't know, how do you say that? It doesn't have the biting heat that a kli rishon has. Okay, so Tosfos says, I'm not going to dispute what the temperature of the vessel is. That might be the same, that it's the same in the kli rishon as in the kli sheni. It might even be hotter sometimes in the kli sheni than it is in the kli rishon, the secondary cup, than it is in the primary one. But nevertheless, so Tosfos, because the kli rishon has that added value that it was heated on that it was actually heated in that pot, and the walls and everything is hot together, we're going to call it the more potent heat. we could dispute the science. I'm not interested in disputing the science. The other answer could be is that that's just the way it is. I mean, Tosos here is trying to come along and give a logical answer to it. Whether you accept the logic or whether you don't accept the logic, right? Those are the facts. Those are the facts that the halacha is dealing with. I mean, halacha did not want to give a temperature. Whatever reason they want to give a temperature, it was either hard to come up with a temperature, it was hard to come up with a way of measuring the temperature, right? The way halacha defines cooking on Shabbos is by way of this methodology of kli rishon, kli sheni, possibly kli shlishi, as we will talk about shortly.
But the primary concern is cooking.
Right.
So if you're going to cook it, you're still going to cook it even if the temperature is slightly low.
Yeah, so if you accept the theory of Tosfos, he's saying you won't. Tosfos' theory is you won't. That part of cooking is that the water doesn't just need to be hot, it has to be potent, right? And if it's potent, so then how's it potent? That the walls are very warm as well.
You still get cooking whether it's...
Yeah, so do you...
The cooking takes a certain length of time.
Yeah.
And as the walls are not hot, the water will cool off faster.
Yeah, but right. You still have some initial thing of
right.
cooking.
I mean,
also.
The question would be like pasta. So would pasta boil in that second?
And in most of the cases today, it's keeping the food warm.
Yeah.
It's not...
Yeah. I would throw in one, even though it's a different topic.
If you have instant coffee...
We'll talk about instant coffee.
It's going to be... Whether it's a kli rishon or shein, it's still dissolved.
Instant coffee is on the agenda. Let me give you something that I thought about is actually in this morning's daf. Even though it's a different area of halacha, the principle I think is very similar. When we talk about hagalas kelim, when we talk about kashri kelim for Pesach, right? It's similar, right? We talk about kli rishon, kli shein. There's taste in the pot, there's outside the pot, right? So that's very, so we can start analyzing the science of do the pores open up, do they not open up, are they kind of open up, what if the taste is there 24 hours, it doesn't taste as good, it does taste, right, we can analyze the science, but I haven't seen this inside anywhere, but if you look at the pasuk in the Torah where these halachas are learned out from, the pasuk starts out by saying, Zos chukas ha-Torah. The pasuk starts out by saying this is a chok, and then goes on to tell you, this concept of if the midyanim, if they used it on fire, so then you have to do it on fire. And if they used it in water, then you have to get rid of it by water. Right? It goes on and explains the concept that we can apply logic to the concept, but sometimes at the end of the day, we can say I think we're still on safe ground saying that it's a chok, and let's just understand the concepts and how to apply them. Okay, so So my question then is: okay, so generally the paradigm for talking about using liquids to cook very often is, by the way, use of tea bags. So we'll use the tea bag paradigm for now. Okay, so our Gemara just said very clearly, kli sheni eino mevashel, that in a secondary cup, a kli sheni is not mevashel, doesn't cook. So what keeps me taking a cup, right? Putting in a tea bag, right, and pouring in hot water into here, right? Kli sheni eino mevashel, right? This is a secondary cup, right? This is the primary cup, and this is the secondary cup. I'm taking from—I didn't plan this, but this is great. I'm taking from the urn, pouring it into this cup, right? So kli sheni mevashel. In theory, that should be mutter, right? That should be permissible. So anybody think that's permissible?
We would like it to be permissible.
Okay. Anybody think it's permissible? So perhaps in this century, I don't think too many people think it's permissible, but several people in the past, the grandchildren of Rashi, there are some that didn't think it was permissible. That there is a... Oh, I forgot to put it on. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I thought I put it on. Tosfos quotes in the name of the Rashbam, that he thought it was okay. That kli sheni eino mevashel. I want to take my tea bag, put it in my cup, pour it in here, and that's going to be okay. So the Rashbam thought that was okay. Kli sheni eino mevashel. End of story. So the reason why the Rashbam was voted down is that there is a Gemara in Pesachim that says that when you pour onto something that's hot, right? So while it is true that kli sheni eino mevashel. When you're pouring onto a tea bag, right, is it a kli sheni yet? It's not, right? Why not? What do we call that? We call that Irui Kli Rishon. We call that pouring from Kli Rishon. So even though it may not be Kli Rishon itself, which whatever, right? It might not actually cause it to be completely cooked. The Gemara Masechta tells us, at least for the purposes of absorptions of other tastes, meaning these halachas come in the kitchen as well, with hot food, etc. At least for the absorption of taste, the Gemara tells us that if you pour, let's say, hot milk onto a cold piece of meat, right? So the Gemara tells, hot milk right off the flame, Kli Rishon, hot milk onto a cold piece of meat. So besides having a heart attack, right, we'll also make the meat somewhat not kosher. Why? Why Kli Sheni? It's a Kli Sheni. The Gemara tells us that maybe it's true that the entire piece of meat may not be a problem, but the top of it is, meaning the top layer, we assume that the hot milk causes enough cooking that it gets into the top layer of meat. So if I take my tea bag, the tea is generally uncooked, and put it under this hot water, right? So the hot water will at least cook the top layer of tea, and for the purpose of Shabbos, you're cooking, right? You might not be cooking the whole thing, but you're cooking something. So since you're cooking something, so most disagreed with the Rashbam. Most disagreed based on the Gemara Masechta, they thought that the Rashbam was incorrect. Okay, so therefore, we're so far to take water from the urn and pour it directly onto tea, so that we're not going to do. However, there is a very important halacha, something halacha l'maisa that comes out just from this halacha as well. That some may know that besides our personal prohibitions or our personal mitzvahs, the way what we do in the kitchen, right? This year is about, well, how do we do things in the kitchen, right? On Shabbos, or how do we deal with our food on Shabbos? So aside, a big tangent to that is, well, if you, and in fact, that's how the Siman Shulchan Aruch gets started, is let's say somebody does it wrong, right? So is the food prohibited or not? Right? There's another idea of, right, if you cook on Shabbos, the food is not allowed to be eaten on Shabbos, right? That's one of the, that's a halacha as well. So I just didn't have time to find the exact source of this, but we assume that while it is true, we're going to go through the whole shiur about how we're supposed to prepare properly for Shabbos. However, if somebody does it what we would, in our eyes, say it's improper, I mean, we would not do it that way, we think so, whatever, if that person has any shita to rely on, if that person has any opinion that holds like them, even if we don't pass them like them. I mean, even if in Shulchan Aruch we say against it, and even though most of the Rishonim and whatever, everybody says against it, right? If there's a opinion to rely on, the food does not become prohibited. Right? So the food does not become prohibited in such a case. So therefore, in this case, the Rashbam, even though we might decide against him in practicality, right, I'm going to walk up to the Rashbam and say he's wrong. The Rashbam is not wrong. He's what to rely on. There are some who say this Rashbam is far out there, but he's what to rely on. He's what to rely on. So if that's the case, so this does come up. And sometimes we're invited out to someone's house or whatever. We're comfortable with a lot of things. We may not be so comfortable that they know all the details of how to make tea on Shabbos. And then the end of the meal comes, and they say, "Would you like a cup of tea?" So generally speaking, so we might be, whether we should be in that situation or not in that situation or whatever, right? Bottom line is, it's going to be very difficult for them to make a cup of tea that would be prohibited for you to drink. I mean, you may not like the way they're making the tea, but the tea, once it's made, will be permissible to eat. Or to drink. We don't need tea. Drink tea. Right? It will be permissible to drink. And that's very important with all of these halachas. We talk about chazara also. We talk about returning to the blech as well. Right? So there's some opinions that we don't paskin like. Right? We'll say for next week to take food and put it directly onto the blech. Right? So I would not advise that. That's not what we do in our house. I would not advise a blech sitting on top of a flame. I would not take food and put it directly onto that blech. But there are Rishonim that said that you could do that. There are Rishonim that said you could. So if somebody has that practice, and there are communities that have that practice, we'll talk about that next week, right? And I'm invited to that person's house. So that person has the right to rely on what they do. And I don't have to say, well, according to me, that food was made in a prohibited way. Right? I could rely on their lenient opinion, and I'm allowed to eat that food. Right, so I think that's a very important thing to keep in the back of our head. I mean, it's very difficult. So this actually answers one of the questions I was asked in my interview that apparently got some people very nervous when I was asked about whether we'd eat in people's houses. And I responded at the time, Joel, you're a part of this, right? I responded that it's very difficult for a person to really cause a problem that would make it impossible for me to eat. Right, so this is one of the, whether in kashrus, we'll talk about that in kashrus areas, in the area of Hilchos Shabbos, right, it's very, unless the person is going to take raw meat and cook it on Shabbos, right, it's going to be very difficult for them to violate bishul in a way that I would be prohibited from partaking in that food. Okay, so now we understand. Now we'll calm down. Right? Now we understand what that means. Okay.
Going back to the issue of what constitutes cooking, what's the difference between pouring hot water over a bag of tea and pouring lukewarm or even cold water over a bag of tea? The net result is the same, except that one will take place faster, and lukewarm or cold water, you can still make tea even with lukewarm or cold water.
Yeah, so
and that result is the same, but for the difference.
Right, so you could maybe hold that thought a little bit, but besides the fact that tea is going to come out when it's mixed with water, right, the tea itself is raw, right? Yeah. The tea itself, this is all raw tea.
Right.
So even though whether the tea is cooked or not, might not care because it will make tea anyways. At the end of the day, I'm still cooking this tea.
With hot water.
I'm cooking the tea. Right? Why the liquid comes out? So that's an important scientific debate that we'll cover hopefully tonight, even though we're already 20 minutes in. Okay, so that's taking care of Eroi Kli Rishon. So now we get up to our Kli Sheni. So now I know better. Okay, I'm not putting the tea bag in, but now I have this cup, right? So get out that some of the residue down there. So now I fill it up from my urn. Now am I allowed to put, now it's Kli Sheni. It's a Kli Sheni cup. Now am I allowed to take a tea bag and put it into there? Alright, so that seems from this Gemara, Kli Sheni Einu Mevashel, what could be wrong with that? So does anybody know what's wrong with that? Anybody?
You just answered the question, you're cooking it.
No, but now it's Kli Sheni.
But you're still cooking.
No.
We said the same thing with cold water.
Right. The proof is you're not cooking it because the same thing happened with cold water. Just because the water turns brown, the water turning brown is not a result of you cooking the tea leaves. Right, the water turns brown because the water interacts with the tea leaves, right? whether it's hot or not. Right, but if you pour water onto the tea, it doesn't mean the tea leaves can't be cooked. Right, the tea leaves are being cooked independent of whether the water is turning brown or not. That's going to be an issue that the Aruch HaShulchan raises as well. So what's the issue with this Kli Sheni stuff? So Shulchan Aruch writes that while it's true that Kli Sheni Einu Mevashel, this is based on the Gemara, while it's true that a secondary heat, a secondary cup won't cook, there are a couple exceptions to the rule. And the Shulchan Aruch lists them as Chutz Min Hamaliach Hayashan Min Hadag Shenikra Kulis. This is the second line of that of source 3. Min Hadag Shenikra Kulis Haspanin Sheinon Tzrich and Bishul El Maat Vadachasan Higmar Belachdan. That we have these small fish or these salted things, these very small things sometimes, that they could be cooked even in a Kli Sheni. The Gemara says there are a few examples of things that could be cooked in a Kli Sheni. Maybe very finely diced spices, right? Little things like, right? But there are a couple things that may be, so, okay, good. So how do we know? So Gemara gives a couple examples, these small fish, etc. So it comes along the Magen Avraham and says, unfortunately, we don't really know where the Gemara gave a few examples of that, but we don't really know where to draw the line. Right? We don't know. We don't know what's considered kalei habishul, things that are easily cooked and will even be cooked in the Kli Sheni. And we don't know what isn't. Right? We just don't know. We don't know what these things are. So the Magen Avraham says, Yesh dvarim shemizvashlim bo ve'ein anu b'kiyin. There are things that are cooked in a Kli Sheni, and we just don't know what they are. V'im kein v'shar dvarim nami yesh lahachmir. Therefore, for everything else, we're going to be stringent. Unless the Gemara has a couple examples of things we know for sure are not cooked in a Kli Sheni. One of those happened to be water. So that's very good to know. That is a practical. That's a good kula, but that's a big kula. You know, with kulas like that, who needs swimmers? You know,
the cooking the kli or the water. Meaning when I'm trans, when I do kli shlishi, it's the water.
Well, we're not up to kli shlishi yet. Nobody said anything about kli shlishi yet. But we said now.
How can you? We already said that in a klisheni, the thing is cooling.
And bishul.
Right. So it's already cooling, but for a couple of things that don't require much cooking, a klisheni is going to cook it.
So it's like if there's a little bit of water in the cup, you haven't washed it,
right?
Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about
water is one obvious exception. So if I've got a little bit of cold water at the bottom of the cup.
No, water is the exception of what can be cooked, not what
No. Water is the exception of what can't be cooked.
If I have a
klisheni, again, this is we're not talking about Eroi klisheni. We're not talking about pouring from here in. I'm talking about once I have the cup.
Right.
Once I have the cup, putting things in here will not cook anything except for a few things. Like Rambam says, we don't know what a few things are, so therefore we're going to say everything. Everything with a couple of small exceptions. One of them, most of them aren't practical. The one that is very practical is water.
So I'll repeat my statement. If there's a little bit of water in the cup.
Problem if water is already in the cup is that if I'm pouring water in, it's going to hit the water.
Yeah.
And that's Iruy Kli Rishon, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's what we're always concerned about with the droplets, etc., right? It's going to hit the water that's on the bottom
but
before
if it's
it becomes
cooking
in
a klisheni.
No, but we said that it's coming from here. So everyone still has that connection to the Kli Rishon, okay? All right. So now we have said, so that's the problem, right? Now, klisheni, right, this cup that came from the earth, right, is going to cook this, perhaps. Right? We're going to be machmer and say that it's going to cook this. Not everybody is so machmer. There are some, those in the, I think, the Brisker tradition, I think, say that, no, you're allowed, this is one of the things we know for sure is not cooked in the cliche, whatever, and they would actually put their tea bags directly into a cup. There is a story on the street, I don't know if it's true, that one time in the Breuer's yeshiva, somebody, the teacher was saying that this teaching this concept that I've just taught you about the klisheni, and the teacher said, but nobody would put a tea bag into a klisheni. And one of her Shechter's children were sitting in the classroom and pointed out that there are some that do rely on this. But generally speaking, the Mishnah Berurah is machmir. The Mishnah Berurah does not say that we should do that.
What you just said before, according to that, you could still drink it.
Right. So if I went to Rav Shechter's house, which I did several times, right, and he would bring out tea that I actually didn't know what he did with the tea. I assumed that it was kosher. So I wouldn't have a problem drinking the tea there. Okay? So the Mishnah Berurah writes, the Mishnah Berurah gives a whole essay with collecting all of these halachos as to, okay, now that we've, you know, now I've gone through the whole story, let me tell you about tea. It's this whole thing, from here down to here, along with the next page here. And he confesses this story that therefore, you know, we can't put in a klisheni. So what do we do? What do us tea drinkers, how can we have our tea and drink it too? So the Mishnah Berurah's recommendation is to make essence, right? Is to make strong tea beforehand, right? And then, so it's really water, right? It's water that's flavored in tea. So then I can, on Shabbos, I have my cup here of water that's been left out overnight and is cold, right? But it's very tea-ish, right? It's heavily flavored tea, right? I fill up, even leave a tea bag in there to make sure it stays, right? I fill up my klisheni, so I got my klisheni here, right? This is really water. Al pi halacha, this is water. So I could take this water, pour it into my klisheni, and now I have tea.
What did you just tell Joel? About having a little bit of cold water.
Right. That was Eroi.
The problem is
that the water is in the water.
Right. What I can't do is take the essence, pour it into my cup, and then put it under the urn.
Gotcha.
Right? Oh, that was good. I like that. That was a good interaction. Okay? That's what I can't do. What I could do is have this cup first and then pour the tea in. And then pour the tea in second. That's itza. That's idea number one. Comes along Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, what is this whole discussion about? The Gemara only goes up to Kli Sheni. The Gemara only goes up to the secondary cup. Comes Rav Moshe Feinstein and says, well, how about if I pour into my Kli Sheni, I got my Kli Sheni, I'm not going to put a tea bag into my Kli Sheni, no way. What if I pour that into a Kli Shlishi? What if I pour that into a tertiary vessel? I only know tertiary because I grew up on a tertiary road, which meant we got plowed before neighbors. So we pour it into a tertiary vessel, right? So what is this? So can I put a tea bag in here? Can I put a tea bag in here? So it says Rav Moshe, yes. Right, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that's the tshuva on the bottom. There is a whole. This is a whole big. There's just a little bit of background on this. This fourth volume of Igros Moshe. So he has a whole list of answers that he gave to Rav Shimon Eider. So Rav Shimon Eider, as he was writing the Laws of Shabbos book, of which we have one of the volumes of the shelves over there. So he, many of the responses in there are from Rav Moshe Feinstein, and some of these are all collected in this tshuva. So there's a whole list of questions. So number 15 on this list is, number 15 within the category of Bishul, goes through many of the malachas and gives many questions, is this question of, can I make it in a kli shlishi? And the tshuva is, you see where it says tshuva, lefi ani es daisi lo nira klal lomar deikad varish misfashin bekli shlishi. The Gemara only tells us that things possibly may be cooked in a kli sheni. Even that, right, is very limited. Right, even that are only a very few things. But the Gemara, I'll be maskim, right? I'll agree that some things are cooked in kli sheni, but we don't find anywhere that anything is cooked in a kli shlishi. The lo matzino el kli sheni yesh tvarim hamisvashim v'meilim yachar she'enam yodim yishlas. As I understand, you can ask for that in kli shlishi lo matzino. We don't find that discussion here. So then he says, u'mashikasev ba'aruch hashulchan simin shin yudches sivchav ches. The einenu roos shetei mispashel gam bekli shlishi. The Aruch HaShulchan says, I understand what you're talking about. I fill up a kli shlishi, I put a tea bag in, and I look, and I see it's all turning brown. Right? So I see it's cooking. Right? So lo muvan ze, says Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe, I don't understand this. Umashiron anu beinenu shemis admin, the fact that the cup turns red, hamayim ze eno inyan bishul, the afbekar mamish mis admin b'meshach zman, that even if I put it in cold water, it would turn red.
Familiar.
Right? So that is the, good. So that is the, so Rav Moshe Feinstein says what he says. Not everybody is so excited about keeping Rav Moshe. Some people say, no, the Gemara never matered kli shlishi. You know, there's a couple of different perspectives. Everything is mutter till proven usher. Everything is usher until proven mutter. And some people hold everything is usher even though it's been proven and it's been mutter. That was what our Sobolovsky used to say that very often in Yerid Vayim. So this is an example where Rav Moshe says everything is mutter till proven usher, right? This, we're talking about it in the Rabbanan. You can't prove to me that a kli shlishi is eino mavashel, that kli shlishi is mavashel. So therefore, I'll assume that a tertiary vessel is good to go. Other Akronim said, I'm not so sure. We're not so, you know, I'm not ready to go there. The Gemara maybe just never discussed it. The Gemara never discussed it, you know, you could say, because it's obvious that it's not true. You know, never discussed it, because once you get beyond a Kli Rishon and get to a Kli Sheni, there's no difference between a Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, Chamishi, Shishi, right? It doesn't matter. Once you get past the Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni distinction, there are no more distinctions. So that's the Machlokas Amorayim. Machlokas of modern-day authorities. I think most people, surely we have the right to rely on Rav Moshe if someone else is relying on me. If someone gives you that tea, for sure you're allowed to rely on it. If somebody wants to be machmir and say I'm going to be machmir and not use a kli shlishi and only use essence, so there are certainly people, you know, that might be a good chumrah, but certainly Rav Moshe doesn't need my agreement to say kedai halismo chalav, to say that he is somebody that we can rely on. So we're good. So that's adkan divrei hati. So the next question in the Igros Moshe is, what about instant tea? Instant tea or instant coffee? you're talking instant coffee, it's going to be the same thing as instant tea. Which, how is instant coffee and instant tea made? What is it? What is it? What?
Dry.
It's dry, meaning it was cooked. Right? It was cooked and then it was dried. Right?
So freeze-dried.
Okay. So I will tell you, I will preface this with a little bit of a story as well. When I was in Phoenix, so we had Rabbi Ozer Glickman, is one of the Rosh Yeshiva at NYU, who came to these Kalan residence by us more than once. I think it was by twice. And I remember he was staying in our house. I remember Shabbos morning. So we had coffee. He wanted to have his coffee. Everybody wants to have their coffee. And so you take out the instant coffee, and of course, me being the big London that I am, said, let's just preface this with one halacha. The halacha is that we have a concept called in bishul achar bishul in Hilchos Shabbos. This is going to be very relevant next week when we talk about returning to the flame. But that's a premise is, once something is cooked, it's not going to be cooked again. So therefore, when we talk about instant tea and instant coffee and things of that nature, so it's been cooked already. So I can't cook it again. Probably, right? That's what Rav Moshe is going to say here. So so I said, oh, we have Rav Moshe's, Rav Moshe says it's instant coffee. Instant coffee can't be cooked. Well, right? So here's your mug. Here's your instant coffee. Go to the urn and pour some water into your mug. And he said to me, like, come on. We're not going to lose by having a chumrah of using a klisheni. And that's exactly what Rav Moshe Feinstein says. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the responsa itself, again, this is the actual page, this is the section on tea, and here's the section on coffee. Right? He says, ba'asiyas coffee nemes. If those are unclear what that is, he writes, instant coffee. So what they do is they cook the coffee, right, and then they dry it. What?
Dry.
Right, they dry it. They cook the coffee and then they dry it. So imishum zeh yishla hachshivu kimavushal kol tzorcho. So could we consider that it was already cooked? Oshem mishum she'ein tamu kashenimuach bekarim doma letamu kashenimuach lechamin yishlo marshehu kimo shenir baruch hashulchatzim shenir chesim chatan. Test, right? Or maybe the fact is that if you take a if you take a instant coffee bean and eat it, right, it's not going to taste very good. If you put it in the hot water and then taste it, so it'll taste a lot better. Of course, for wimps like me, you also need sugar and milk. But that because it's going to spread out, you need the hot water to make it look good, right? To make it look edible, make it edible. So therefore, maybe bishul is connected to it. So he answers tshuva. That was all the question, right? So pashashim ha emes she coffee nemes nispashel b'mayim achar she kalu greeny ha coffee who dover mevushel im bashel kol tzorcho. That even if you're going to tell me that it does get cooked when in that water, it's cooking something that's already cooked. Umistavishu emes midani muach ha coffee v'nemes legamri v'gam hachom shel shmona mos she bishvil zeh nisavish kolkach she nasa avak hu gam kein bishul umila ein bishul achar bishul da hayavishu. But when the way they make it is, it's already cooked. Umemela, and therefore he concludes by saying ein bishul achar bishul, even though it's dry. That because it's dry, ein bishul, right? It's cooked. It's already cooked. Right? So you could pour. You could take your instant coffee and pour from here directly into instant coffee. That's what Rav Moshe says. Ibra, but he does conclude, he puts in one little paragraph, ani machmer la'atzmi. Personally, I'm stringent, bein b'coffee, bein b'sugar, litin b'kli shlishi, aval adina ein lahachmer. He says, personally, I'm stringent on this, because what's the big deal? You just pour it into a cup and pour it into another cup. Right? But Alpi didn't. He says, I don't really have a reason. According to Halacha, it's mutter. Right? So it's... it's mutter to take the instant coffee and pour... Right. Pour it directly in. Pour it directly in. So that's what Rav Moshe is. Personally, I'm machmer. I don't think,
He says he uses kli shlishi.
Right. Meaning he pours into one cup and pours into another
right,
cup.
Right. So a long time ago, we heard that klisheni, as long as you put it in first, and then add the instant coffee to the cup.
Right, that's what Rav Moshe said. Rav Moshe says,
that's not shlishi, it's sheni.
No, 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 Rav Moshe says...
He's saying shlishi.
No, 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 he's saying sheni is mutter, but I'm machmir to put it in a kli shlishi. So personally, I think that's, it's not a difficult chumrah to understand. In theory, a kli rishon would even be mutter, yeah.
Does it matter if you put the instant in before the water or after the water?
Yeah, so it seems like it wouldn't. As we said, pre-reaction theory should also be cooked. It's already cooked. In theory, it should.
In
theory, it shouldn't even matter what order it is, right?
What about the like dying I've actually heard also the opposite, because if you put the coffee in after, you're dying the water.
Yeah. So the dying of the water, Roshi talks about the dying of the water. He thinks that it's not the same thing with making iced tea on Shabbos. All those different things. Are you dying the water? The Smir Shabbos Kilchasa says that it's not. I forget the sources. I didn't prepare for this week, but I remember someone like. Shabbos morning, like, well, excited, Rabbi, my wife wants to. And they're looking it up right then. Shmir Shabbos.
When we gave up talking in terms of the Shmir Shabbos.
What does he say about the coffee? So I'm not sure. I didn't look it up. I looked up, the Rav Moshe's kula here. But again, Rav Moshe himself said, "I'm personally machmir. I don't think there's much to lose." Meaning, ever since that story, they have to be that Shabbos morning. So, I wash the dishes anyways in my house. So, just an extra cup that's a little wet, right? I don't see much downside to keeping this chumah.
But if we said that only a few things are affected, only a few things are actually cooked in a cliche name,
right?
So, is regular coffee, or certainly instant coffee, isn't one of those things?
It's not.
So if you have a question on cliche ni, and then you add the fact that it's already en bishul achol bishul, so isn't that a chum?
I think the reason why. So what's come on? Why is there any reason for the chum? So I'll tell you one thing that's for sure. I wanted to get this out. Practically speaking, and then you'll see why based on this why maybe there's a reason to be machmir. The Starbucks Via, right? The Starbucks instant Via coffee that they just came out with, this doesn't apply to that, because they advertise that they put in real coffee grounds. They say it's generally instant coffee, but in order to give it the fresh Starbucks taste, so they put in some of it is actually not pre-cooked, right?
So wouldn't that be the same as a tea bag?
Right, so then it's the same as a tea bag.
Okay.
Right, so based on that, so that's a good reason to then look at all of our instant coffee. Yes, in theory, it should all be, you don't know what slips in, right? It could be stuff that's not so...
Not if you know the process.
Process prevents that, I hear.
Because when they freeze dry, they actually freeze it.
Right.
Okay, and then they dry it under vacuum.
Right.
So what you do is you're going from a frozen state, the water goes from frozen to vapor, bypassing the liquid. That's freeze dry.
That's not cooked.
It's cooked first.
Right. So then
it's frozen, and then it's dry.
Right, so the suffix is that it could be that a little bit.
It's lyophilized.
That's
what freeze drying is. So I think the suffix is that there might be a little bit that wasn't totally cooked. It's just a concern. There might be a little bit that was never totally cooked. So if that's the case,
And then you're going pachot me, shishim, and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
So that's probably why you don't do it from an Eroi Rishon.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's required. I think what Rav Moshe says is that it's considered ain bishul achar bishul, and there's not much of a way to say that this is being mevashel, right? On the other hand, there is a way. There's that little concern, right? And for that reason, I think it's worthwhile, especially now. Starbucks pulls off the Via trick, so it could be some of the other companies might say, we'll drop in a little bit of real grounds, also, I think that Rav Moshe says, I'm personally machmir, so after that Shabbos, I'm also personally machmir.
But he was pre-Starbucks.
That was pre-Starbucks, yes, it's true.
So you were machmir when this rabbi was in?
Yeah, and
for Shlishi, or for just the Shani?
Shlishi. Meaning, instead of pouring it directly in here, it's also poured in. Okay.
Sugar is refined. Sugar is also...
Yeah, sugar is also refined.
So when you use kosher shlishi, do you use it the same way that you use tea and put the water in first and then add the coffee?
Or yes, at that point, the coffee can be at the bottom of the cup.
Yes, at that point, you can put the coffee at the bottom of the cup.
So that's the difference then with tea, because with tea, you have to put the tea back in afterwards?
Yeah, with the coffee, you put the coffee. The truth is, no. The truth is,
if it's squishy,
I'm thinking Shabbos, but I usually put the coffee in afterwards. I think at that point, I'm not sure it's that big of a chumrah, but put the coffee in. I'm not sure we're losing much. Someone raised, Mark has been bothering me a long time about the French press.
The press.
And whether the French press is mutter on Shabbos.
What?
Right?
What?
Whether a French press is mutter on Shabbos. So what is a French press? So we'll explain. What is a French press? So a French press is that you put in the coffee grounds, right, real fresh coffee grounds, you put that in the bottom of a big cup, and then you pour the hot water on top of it. Then you put this plunger down to hold the grounds in place. You put a screen down, right, this plunger screen thing to hold the grounds down. And then you pour the water out into a cup.
No.
What do I do now?
No. First you have to... You can put the coffee in, put the water in, or vice versa.
Right.
You let it brew a little bit.
Okay.
And then you... Then you plunge it down.
Right, so you let it brew, then you plunge it down, and then you pour the water out into another cup, and then you drink and enjoy. Right, so this is... So what's the issue with that? So again, that... Right, so...
You can make it a cliché.
Once we assume, like Rav Moshe, that a cliché you can't cook in, right, so then you could pour into your cliché lishi, just to be careful, you could pour into your cliché lishi and then pour it into the French press. So the issue is that it might not be the cooking, it might be the separating, right, because you're pushing it down, what are you doing? You're holding back the grounds, and you're pouring the water out, and you're using what we call a kli hamiyuchad lekach, right, we're using a kli, a vessel, specifically designed to hold the grounds back, to perform this vishal. So again, they were getting off, to perform this task, this boer. So this is a prohibition of boer. So I thought it for sure was. But the last couple of weeks on the RCA listserv, somebody brought this up. I think the title of the post was Coffee for Coffee Snobs. Sorry, Mark. No offense.
I am.
Shabbos Coffee for Coffee Snobs was the title of the thing. Absolutely. And he... And his question was about the French press. So the question, obviously, Bishel is an issue. So the way to get around the Boer issue, the way to possibly get around the Boer issue is to say, I'm not being Boer. How am I not being Boer? I'm holding the things in place. The answer may be to not push the press all the way down, right? Make sure that there's water mixed in with the grounds, and as long as there's water that stays with the ground, you're not doing full Boer. I don't think anyone's ready to... I'm not sure who's ready to... nobody has...
Theoretically, if it sat long enough, it would just separate by itself. So you don't need to actually need the machine.
It'll filter out, drip out.
Yeah, the grounds are out.
The grounds are out.
The weight of the grounds is
wrong. When you go to pour it out.
No, when you pour it out, though.
You could get rid of the grounds. If it happens by itself. I said, you don't really need a machine to do it. So theoretically, you could do without a machine.
Not the machine, but the plunger.
Theoretically, you could do without the plunger.
Then you just pour out the top of it.
Right. Wait long enough.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just making it being difficult. That's all.
Okay. So using the French press on Shabbos is still up for debate. We're still trying to work it out, Mark. All right.
Stop using it, but you'll have to let me know.
Okay. So what we're saying is don't squeeze it down. Right. Just push it so it's still above the ground, such that there'll be water that stays put with the ground.
What would happen if you didn't use the plunger, but when you put the coffee in, you...
It would work.
Before you put the water in, have all the coffee at the bottom with the plunger, then you just pour the water in, you're not doing anything to really separate.
No, but the issue is when you're pouring out.
Oh, okay.
You're pouring out, you're holding the door.
What? Not for snobs. No, it doesn't work that way.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, these guys are a different breed. Ideas are welcome, but be prepared for them to be shot down. I think that's the way to go. All right. One. So I want to... Oh, truth is, the bread chumrah is an important chumrah. So the next siman in the next sif in Shulchan Aruch says that I'm not even sure I put it on. I did not put it on. Sorry about that. The next sif in Shulchan Aruch talks about the following idea. Right. So we've been talking about ein bishul achar bishul. I mentioned that already. If something's cooked, it can't be cooked again. Right. What about if something has not been cooked, but rather it's been baked? Right? So can I cook something, can I physically cook something that has only been baked that wasn't cooked? So it's machlokas, as you might have guessed, right? So that's a machlokas. So if you assume, so this is the issue, if you assume that bread could be cooked, right? I mean, when bread comes in, if I would take bread and drop it into the urn, right, that would be considered kli rishon of the, right, kli rishon, I'm cooking the bread, I'm amish cooking the bread, right? So if we would assume that bread could be cooked, right, that bread then therefore would have the status with regards to bishul as a tea bag, right? Have you got that? So let's say, so the comes the yureim, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, says, yay, shmisha omer, there are those that say, this is a, the davar shenefo nitzla, something that was not cooked, but rather either barbecued, either roasted or baked. So this comes up very often with bread. It could have come up with roasted chicken as well, right? Acharkach b'mashke yesh im bishlo acharkach b'mashke yesh bo mishum bishul. Right? If I cook it in water, it's bishul. Right? If I take bread, put it into a boiling hot water. Right? So I'm cooking the bread. Right? I'm cooking the bread. The usser, now he comes along and says, so now I have my chumrah, one chumrah, that bread could still be cooked, right? Even though it's baked, it could still be cooked. I'm going to take the other chumrah and say, not only does a kli rishon cook, but a kli sheni cooks. So if I take two and two and put it together, in theory, I should get four, right? So if I take my bread that was only baked, that wasn't cooked, I put it into my kli sheni, right, but also litain pas afilu b'klisheni sheyatzoledes bo v'yishmatirin. Right, there are those that prohibit taking my bread and putting it into my klisheni, my secondary cup. When would I put my bread into a secondary cup? Into my soup. So this is the famous chumrah of the Urayim, that you're not allowed to take your bread and dip it into soup on Shabbos. Now, first of all, the Shulchan Aruch quickly says, and there are those that are matir. He himself admits that it's a dispute. So the Mishnah Berurah comes along and, well, let's, based on what we've learned so far, can I come up with what would be the big leniency on this?
Or maybe the ladle is like klisheni.
The ladle would be perhaps a klisheni, right? And the bowl would be a klishlishi. So according to Rav Moshe's theory, that a klishlishi is not mevashel. Right, so then I could go ahead and do that. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah, even though the Mishnah Berurah in his section on tea never quotes the idea of kli shlishi, here he does quote the idea of kli shlishi, which many point to see that the point the Mishnah Berurah really assumed, like there's such a thing. With a kli shlishi mitzadei de prima gadim lahakel, and he quotes an opinion to be lenient in the case of kli shlishi. The question just is on this is, some say to still be machmir on it. Why? Because is a ladle really a klisheni? Right? What's my classic case of a klisheni? My classic case of a klisheni is, I got my cold cup, I take from my hot urn, pour it into my cold cup, I got my klisheni, right? Pour it into my klisheni. A ladle, I'm not pouring from here, rather I'm dipping my ladle in, right? What's the reason that Tosfos said that a klisheni works? That there's such a thing as a klisheni. What was the original reason?
Because
the walls are cold. If I dip my ladle into the pot, my sides aren't cold anymore, my sides are warm. It could be that a ladle is not a klishlishi, or a klisheni, but rather goes back to playing a klirisha. Now that, again, as you could probably guess, would be a dispute. So what is that? Would be a machlokas as well. So the Mishnah Berurah does say, Mishnah Berurah does seem to imply, he says, imrotza litain pas, if somebody, I put this in?
Yeah, next to the left.
Right? Imrotza, what?
Third line.
Okay. All right. Elim Rotza, towards the bottom of that. He says, Yesh Lizar, Miz Elim Rotza Litain Pas, if one wants to put their bread into their soup, so Yantimach Loya Yatsu Lettuce Mimeric. So one opinion, one Eitza is, we'll just wait for the soup to cool down. Okay. Not sure that's going to solve our soup, our challah and soup connoisseurs' problems. Osha L'chol HaPachos, at least, Yeshay B'kaf Min HaKadera Kadesh Tiyak Harak Lishlishi. Make sure that you don't pour from the soup bowl from the soup pot into your soup bowl, but rather make sure to dish out with a ladle. So there's a lot of question about what the Mishnah Berurah means when he says l'chol hapachos. At least do this. Meaning, is the Mishnah Berurah recommending that, or is the Mishnah Berurah saying, you know, look, if you're really going to need to have your challah in your soup, at least do this. Right, so it's unclear what the Mishnah Berurah is saying. I think so, and certainly has a right to rely on this. But
it's not just challah. It's like soup nuts and noodles and everything. It's the same thing.
So challah is it's not the same thing for a very important reason.
Challah is baked.
Yeah, it's very important. Very good. The soup nuts are fried. Soup nuts are fried. So, and especially the little yellow, the tiles, are deep fried. So many point out that the day that the girls find this out in seminary, that is the best and worst day of the year in seminary. Right? On one hand, they find out that, I could still put my tiles into the soup. On the other hand, they also find out that they're deep fried and therefore don't want to put it in the soup anymore. So those l'chuli alma, the tiles are mutter. There is a very strong sad to say that the soup nuts are also fried, and therefore those are mutter. And the truth is, there's really a strong sad to say that the challah itself is also permissible. Mishnah Berurah says, "Chol hapachos, you should at least make sure to do this." I think that
noodles are usually cooked with the soup.
That's right. The
noodles are for sure cooked.
Right.
But they have these coffee little things.
Oh, but you mean the Chinese noodles.
Dover Gush will save. So that was the bread chumrah. We'll save Dover Gush for next week. But bottles and measuring tubes are important for our purposes. Number one, bottles. This is very practical, that bottles, especially if when a woman is nursing and they perhaps might save up some milk and they want to take the milk out from the fridge on Shabbos, so the milk is very cold when it comes out of the fridge on Shabbos. Right? So can I take how can I heat up the bottle? So how can I heat up the bottle?
Warm water.
So one would be warm. What do you mean warm water?
In the kosher.
So one is to take a kosher, right? Because this is liquid. Most assume that milk is also not kaliyavishal, right? So I'm allowed to take the milk and put that into the water. What about taking the milk and putting it directly under the urn? So that most point out is mutter as well. Why is that mutter? Because, again, why did we say Iroi Kli Rishon, water that comes straight out from the urn, why did we say that is a problem? Because the Gemara tells us, right, that I cook the outside layer of whatever I'm pouring onto. So what is the outside layer of a bottle of milk? The bottle, right? The bottle can't be cooked, right? The bottle is not the ein bishul achar bishul, surely applies to the bottle, right? So the bottle is not going to be cooked. So therefore, most assume that if I have, usually, practically speaking, it's going to be that I put it into a hot bottle of water, but a hot cliché. But for sure, to take it and put it under, but most assume to put it under a yiruy of the kli rishon, so that would be permissible for the bottle as well. The other thing, just that strictly, Dover Gush isn't strictly within Bishul, but the measuring tubes on urns is on my mind because Rabbi Shresensky, some of you remember, had a discussion with me about this earlier this week, that if you look at some of the urns, even the ones that have Shabbos modes, so some of them have a measuring hole, right? That they have like a little thing where you can look through that has a tube that has water there. So that water cools off. That water is not in the urn. That water is a little bit cooler, especially this one doesn't, but maybe for this reason. But some of these types of urns actually have it like away from the urn itself, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. No, it's totally away. So is that so that's a problem because the water that's in the measuring tube is not being cooked. So therefore, am I merging the hot water with the water from the tube? So
I thought you said water can't be.
No, but it can't be, it's, once it's in a klisheni. But here, I'm mixing it right here. If I'm mixing it here, that's a kli rishon.
But it's, if it's a separate tube, it's a klisheni.
No. But when I'm mixing it with the water that's in here, when it comes into my cup, it's all coming in together. Right? That means that it mixes here someplace. If it mixes here, that's still a kli rishon status.
That water was never hot.
No. So what I pointed out, right, is that the water was hot. Right? Usually the water was hot, and now it's cold. Right, so water that was hot, and now that's a big question. Does ein bishul achar bishul apply to water? Right, if water was hot, and now I cool it off, so can I? Now I heat it up again on Shabbos. Right, I put it on a fire. So do I violate the malacha do reisa of bishul? It's questionable, right? So we assume lahachmor on that. We assume that we will treat the cold water as cold. Right, never been hot before. So, but the Ramah does say that that's only when it's completely cold. If it's still somewhat warm, even if it might not be Yatzel Edespo, right, then that's still mutter. So I point that out is, especially I have a plastic urn where the measuring thing is inside. So I don't think that water ever becomes cold. That water is still pretty hot. Even though it might not be Yatzel Edespo, it's still pretty hot. So I think that's okay. Even the ones that are separate, so there you have it's a little bit more questionable. I would recommend not purchasing those. But in the Rabbi Ribbiev book, he mocks those as well. He thinks that those are mutter, and he pointed out in the English part, for reasons way beyond the purview of this work. And if you look in the back, there's about 4 pages of explanation as to why that is. So he says thinks that it's permissible, but I would recommend, you know, that when we're in the market for a new urn, that you that we try to avoid that issue. I remember once when I was in the Riverdale Jewish Center, I think I said something having to do with, I might have been this halacha, I don't remember. I remember saying something having to do with those urns in shul, like between Mincha Maariv, like a little between Mincha Maariv talk. And somebody raised their hand, excuse me, I invented those. And it was specifically made, it was specifically designed so that that wouldn't be a problem. I mean, the POSIC that we were discussing was made sure that that wouldn't be a problem. Okay? So I think certainly the plastic ones, right, the plastic pumps, I think there's certainly Mahu Lismochalav, and the urns that have the separate thing, so certainly Rabbi Ribbiev is going to give you a kula. You take every kula you can get in this book. Right? So if he's going to give you that kula, I think one is certainly entitled to take it, but I think if you're in the market of buying a new urn, so, you know, worthwhile to be machmor on it.
Does he say that you should pump it like one time before Shabbos? I mean, it was a question whether the water boiled that was in that area.
I don't know. We leave ours on 24/7
immediately.
Yeah.
No,
I hear what she's saying. I hear what's going on.
You pump it once before just to get that water out. Other water will enter it, but that water perhaps
I hear what you're saying. That would work for the metal ones. I'm not sure that works for the plastic ones.
I thought
that
when the plastic ones came out, I thought that's what we were told.
It was
a long time
to pump ones. I don't know. Ours is on 24/7, so we don't.
Oh, it's on all the time.
Ours, we keep. We just, especially winter mode. Ours is now. It's now on winter mode. Not for good. All right. So maybe Adkan. We'll stop here. We'll pick up next week with some other issues.
So if I can.